Well, hello there. This is Jim the Keys bartender coming to you from a beautiful, perfect day. I got to get out there. I had to record early because I want to get out there and get a little sun, do stuff outside, and then go to the gym before I go into work today. That's a nice thing living in paradise, and I'm sure there's people out there living in their own paradises, different places, and it's paradise, different times of the year, as it is here in the Keys. So, what I want to start first is talking about how to revive your business if you're a bar. I always like to use the word anecdotal because it's only from my experience, but I think a lot of people would observe this. When new businesses open up, you ever see the show Bar Rescue? When places rebrand or businesses open up, they rebrand on Bar Rescue. What they come in to take a place that's a bar that's complete shit, reorganize it, maybe fire a couple people, and do a whole style over for a restaurant. And then they open up again, and people love that stuff. They absolutely love it. And just on display, whenever you see a new restaurant open up, there's always that bump in newness. We got a couple places that just opened down here in the Upper Keys, and they'll be busy for a while and they'll ride that high of being open. A lot of times, poor management, bad organization, bad work ethics, poor business planning can be masked by the idea of being new. And I'm not suggesting anything that open up here isn't doing well, isn't doing the right thing. If you open up a new business and a bar or restaurant and it's going gangbusters and you're managing it the right way, you're buying the product the right way, you're taking care of the customers, textbook wise, doing everything perfectly, yes, that is the recipe for success. And there's a lot of places when they open up, they stick to it and do it. But if you see your business lagging, sometimes you could do a little rebranding. And that's what it takes. Because even though you improve, let's say you have a failing business model, a bar where you may have some workers that aren't really customer oriented and their work ethics are kind of shoddy or below par. You could do that change, but people will vote with their feet in whether they come into that business. If they had a prior experience that was less than mediocre, they may shun your place altogether. So sometimes you have to do even a change, even a name change does it, but you can remodel. You can move things around. You can move your tables around. You can change the coloring on your signs. Just something like that and say, oh, it's totally different. And people come in here, I don't really see anything different, but your attitude is different. Your workers are different, so I'll give you another shot. So that's what it takes sometimes, just changing it around, getting something working. And I'm not going to go through the details of what makes a good place and what makes a bad place. I mean, good places, you got to be kind of customer oriented. We are in the service industry. Service industry, we provide services. And you want to be detail oriented when it comes to the product you serve. You got to know your market, who you're trying to serve, all those things. I'm not talking today. I'm just talking about revitalizing your business. And sometimes you have to clean house. Sometimes it's really hard to get rid of the people. Sometimes I'm sure it could be at other places, having me in the mix could be just the change you want. And I mean getting rid as just as well as adding. And I have to make myself as an employee, I realize I have to make myself more marketable. It's not up to the business. I had one owner of a bar restaurant. The business was lagging, and the owner suggested, hey, you got to get out there and promote the place. And I said, well, that's kind of your job, isn't it? My job is to provide service in-house. But then again, I guess it is partly my job. I do know people, and if you're sociable, why not get the people you know to come into your business? Right? So yeah, kind of made sense for him saying. I kind of disagreed with the amount of emphasis he wanted me to provide, but I can see that point. I concede it. Meaning, yes, it's partly my responsibility. It's partly his responsibility because I'm not there all the time, or their responsibility, depending on the man or woman, right? Doesn't really matter. So I'm going to leave that. It's about 5.5 minutes into the show. Let's stop talking about bartending. Now, wherever, and it's just not bartending, if you have a job that is involves the public, you're in front of the public, you're talking to people. I enjoy talking to people, obviously, evidenced by me doing a podcast. I'm even doing it for 7 years. By the number of episodes, I think today's 812. And on my podcast app, there may be 870 different shows there. Yes, I'm not shy. I'm not shy. But being a social person, being able to talk to the public doesn't mean I connect with the public, as evidenced by the numbers of my listeners. That could be the quality of my sound, the quality of my just the substance of the show. I realize that, but I still plod on. I don't let things get to me too much because I enjoy doing this. This is kind of like a daily ledger that I write, a diary, a dear diary. Dear diary, am I getting hemorrhoids today? No, I wouldn't write that into a diary. I guess I could, but I don't. I'm pretty sure I don't have hemorrhoids. I don't have a problem sitting. I don't have an irritation. And hopefully you're not eating right now because I didn't want it to come. That's something that just popped into my head. I get ideas all the time. And recently I've been pondering about this Generation X, Y, Z, millennial. I'm not commenting on the qualities of those generations. You might think I might have a problem as an old codger, a man who's 60, who's very vital. I have to say I am very vital. I'm gonna judge myself. I'm very vital. I'm very fit. In a lot of ways, I have a fitness of I guess a fit. I was going to say teenager, but not really. Fit 20, somewhat fit 20-year-old. And I bet there's a lot of teenagers out there that are couch potatoes that I'm well on the way. But I'm not one of those older guys that want to say I can, who was that woman? Molly Shannon. I'm 50. I can kick. I can stretch. I can kick. Well, I try to do all around stuff. Be flexible, strong, have good cardio health, and a good skincare regimen so I don't look like a dried out potato, as some people of my grouping or demographic grouping may be. But to get back to that designations, the millennials, the X, Y, Z. We had boomers. I was a boomer. You had the greatest generation. The greatest generation was n labeled kind of backwards. And that was Tom Brokaw, came out of the book during, about people that were around during World War II. I mean, they got the greatest generation. What the fuck? I mean, what's the rest for the rest of us to do, right? And then you have baby boomers. They had the luck of being born after war, and prosperity, was present in the United States because of our, after World War II, we were relatively the most developed country in the world that wasn't damaged by war on its soil, and also probably Canada, including Canada and Australia. So, but we were the large country, you know, population and all that. So with all that prosperity and all the people, we didn't lose tons of people during World War II. Relatively got off light as one of the big countries where they other ones lost. Britain may have lost over 500,000, a much smaller country than we are. We lost about 250,000, and Russia lost, what, 20 million? China, maybe 50. Japan had millions. So here we go. We got all these people come back, and tons of babies were born because there was excess money. There was prosperity in the United States. So they called it the baby boom, right? The baby boom. Boom. It's like a bomb. Like the atomic bomb. How appropriate, because the atomic bomb was created. But if you ever seen the movie Oppenheimer, I know a little more of the background because I was a history major, but I'm not going to go into depth there. So you had a big group of people coming that were born post-World War II and into my, I guess I'm the end of the baby boomers, 1963, because you know, people in their late 30s, they're still having babies. They're still having babies. You know, the guys are married to younger women. They could be in their early 30s. And they, you know, I'm a product of, I'm a baby boomer. I'm a late baby boomer. So then you had these new, the millennials after baby boomers, they get millennials. And there's generation X, Y, and Z. The problem I have is why did they go? I can see the millennial. Yeah, it was born around the turn of the, you know, 1999 to the 20. We went from 19 to 2. So that's significant, somewhat, if you want to go by date because of the calendars we have. But X, Y, and Z. Why the fuck did we go to the back of the alphabet? You know, with a little forethought, they should have called it Generation A, B, C, even though it's not the first generation. The first generation would have been whatever the first group of humans were, or the progenitors of humans. But if you're going to start designating generations, which they didn't do back in the 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s, why not start at A instead of the end of the alphabet? What do we do now in 10 years? And people say, well, we go with alpha. Why are we getting away from the English alphabet so early after designating the letters? Just what a freaking waste of time. Poor planning. Poor planning. And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And Z, if you're at the end of it, Z is kind of like, when you call someone, you know, XYZ, right at the end, that's not necessarily your Z class person. That's not really good. You know, there's Z class automobiles. I think there were Z. But, you know, A1, the steak sauce on grades A. So whoever gets to be, you know, when they figure it out eventually, and they start saying, this is Generation A. Maybe that's when we're out in space, right? When we're traveling to another planet, they're going to have multi-generational spaceships. What's a multi-generational spaceship, Jim? Well, because space is a big, big, big area. It takes long times to get there. Currently, we don't have any spacecraft that, they travel at infinitesimal fractions of the speed of light. So if the nearest star system other than the solar system, our solar system, is a couple years, light years away, it could take us maybe 50,000 years to get to that star system. In order to get 50,000 years, you have to have a multi-generational craft, people living and dying and There's all these science fiction has all these different scenarios, freezing people's embryos and then hatching them out prior to arriving and then having androids raise the people, right? So the first generation born in space could be generation A and B. Or how about numbers? Why not generation one, two, three, four? And what designates generations? Just because you were born in 1990, you're generation X, or Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z. And is there a generation Y? I don't know. I know about Gen X and Gen Z and millennials and boomers. Okay, boomer. I have a problem with stereotyping people, and doing it with the letters has been shitty. Shitty, shitty, shitty idea. And I just want to throw my hat in the ring, and that's my opinion. I'll be back in a moment. Okay, I am back, as evidenced by my voice speaking right now. So, yeah, it sounds like I'm doing a comedy routine, but these are just things that I'm thinking about recently. I think it's recently, over the last couple of years. I didn't need to be told by any news agency or observers of our culture that we are very litigious. We are litigious people. Human beings are litigious. United States, in particular, as evidenced by our commercials. Whenever you see a car commercial, any time nowadays, because if you think about it, commercials, they used to purport many things. In the old West, you had people traveling on the back of wagons. They didn't have an FDA or anybody saying the shit you're saying is false, a government entity saying that. You could pretty much say anything prior to government oversight. You could get a bottle, a brown bottle, put a bunch of shit in it, and say, this will cure everything. This bottle that I have in here, and could have rattlesnake piss in it, manure, dead flies, whatever, and say, this will cure dropsy, whatever it's called, consumption, all those things you hear in these old movies, and they didn't have a name for it, and they just said, well, we'll just call it this. We'll call it dropsy because people seem to drop when they get it, or consumption because it eats them up. Rarely do they say, you never hear it saying they got cancer. No, they called it something else. They always called it something else. And the things they used as remedies were very questionable. Very questionable items. You had some good things come out. You had some painkillers. You had opium, codeine, cocaine, and then it later got abused by humans, obviously. That's what we do. So all these things, and no one telling you whether this thing works or thing doesn't. Recently, I was using a stem cell patch, a purported stem cell patch, and it was a free sample. And they gave me a pack of four. And stem cells, just the imagery for me, if you're a believer in science and you realize stem cells are stem cells and are not necessarily drugs, just things from human body and bodies, and they're just cells that are base cells that can form into other cells. They can differentiate to liver cells, meniscus cells, whatever, joints, organ cells. That's the theory, right? And so there's a lot of stem cell going on, stem cell research and therapies and things like that. So a person came in and they purportedly had it, and I will not try to pan placebo effects. Because just the idea that something will work, the white pill, red pill idea, meaning when they do studies for drugs, they give you a lot of times they do a blind study where the person doesn't know if they're taking a drug that has the active ingredient in it or the other that's just a sugar pill or something that's not interactive. It'd be funny if the mix of the whatever binding agent or thing they put in the placebo pill actually became the thing that actually cured something, and people would be studying the real, the real drug they're testing would not really change over it, but the placebo pill would be more successful. And then you say, wait, what did we put into placebo pill? Well, we had this company that just makes it. They also make Pez the candy. So we got to find out what he put in there because it just cured it. The person's 90 years old and they just look, they're walking around like they're 50. And that's the idea between the stem cell, right? That it's going to help you repair your body. As people age, I know I'm jumping all around here, but people age, the cells in their bodies have a hard time being replaced. And we're being, and there's a lot of accumulation of damage. You damage skins, damage the organs, I guess with bones, and maybe a hard time regenerating new cells. So stem cells are supposed to aid in, I guess it's the telomeres, it's the endings of these parts of the cell that help you replace them. And here it is. This is where my weakness is. In this science, I have a very shallow understanding of it. So I got these four patches and I tried them for 4 days. And I tell you, I felt reinvigorated. I felt stronger, more energetic, healthier. And I'm thinking, wow, I got to really check this out. I got to see if it's real or not. And only I know. Even I won't discount placebo. If I believe something works and the act of taking it allows it to work and me believing in it, then maybe, yeah, it's worth it. I mean, if you're paying money, you say, well, that really doesn't work, but it's your head telling you it works. Well, what's the difference? I mean, you'd like to think, just tell yourself to be healthier, right? But the mind is so powerful. And once you change your perspective, like you shut off that valve, the valve of what you think is working, and you take it away, and your brain tells you, well, you don't have that thing that was working. Even though it wasn't working, it was your head telling it that it was. Well, maybe something helping you, providing you relief. And maybe allowing your body to repair. I mean, it's just crazy out there, because as you age, you feel some more soreness, pain. The body doesn't recover when I work out as much. When I because I'm taking yesterday when I was working, I sliced the top of my hand a bit, and that was generally just a scratch where I would, dribble a little blood across my hand. Well, it looked like I was in a gang fight, and someone caught me with a switchblade because I had blood running down my hand. That is not a look. It may make you look tough if you're in a fight and it doesn't bother you and you're bleeding and you're continuing. Yes. But when you're at work trying to serve people, they don't want to see you bleeding. That's a truism. It works almost every place you go, unless you're giving blood. Then they want to see you bleed. But you got to bleed specifically then into a tube that goes into a bag. There's some wisdom for you. So, all this story I'm talking about, I talk about placebos, taking things, and I think I'm not going to commit to something. Meaning, I don't want to make a financial commitment to something before I have evidence that is working. And the person that's providing, provided the free samples. They put me on a site, and there was a site where you have to sign up for a membership in order to order. And then there's packages you get, and they have all these different products. And the one product I wanted was the one product that I used. The one product I used, not the other products. I didn't do it. I don't know what those other products do. I'm not going to poo-poo the other products. I just want to do it. And I'm not complaining about it. I just didn't understand the ordering process. So look, it sounded a little convoluted. But in my head, the placebo, if it was a placebo, it would work great. If the active ingredient worked, great. But what sets off the alarms in my head is I got to sign up for a membership. And once you sign up for a membership for something, and you have a subscription for something, and you say, "Oh, this monthly cost would be this." And I said, "Well, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. I just want it, just try it for a month or two and see if it worked." And I analyze things. I would have jumped right on it if they just sold it and just say, "How much is a month?" It would be $100, blah, blah, blah. I'll try it for 1 month. Yes, $100 is a lot for some people. But for me, if it's my health and I'm feeling vim, vigor, younger, more resilient, I'll do it. I'll absolutely do it. And then I would think about, yes, it's worth having this membership. I mean, how would you, if you're approaching my age, if you're in my age group and you felt more active and heal quicker. I did mention energy, but those signs of youth are coming back, or at least you're thinking that they're coming back. How much is it worth to you? Yeah, it could very well be worth about $1,200 a year. Very well. So, but if I sign up for a plan, then I feel more obligated to get the next year, week, month. And then sometimes you forget about your subscription, but I use an application now that kind of knocks that back and said, if I'm not using that and it's not providing any value, I'm going to cancel it. So here I go. I'm looking at this order system they have, and there's membership, the plan, the different products we have. I only wanted one product. So, well, you get the silver plan, and I hope, I can't wrap my head around it right away. I want to get it once, but I don't want to pay $150 for it. I want to pay the $99 for it. Just try it for 1 month. And think about all the money that you spend. Now, I don't drink anymore. There was many times when I went out and I would spend $70, $80 in one night. Yes, I drank a lot. Now, or maybe buy a drink for someone else. And so me spending $100 where something could help me is not a big thing. It's not a big thing. And the returns are, and that's the way I look at it. That's the way I look at it. So I'm just cautioning people when they're doing things, don't automatically jump on subscriptions and plans where you get obligated. But there are ways of trying to use. I'm going to try it and see if it works. If it works, there could be a really good reason to do it. But I know a lot of these places, these multi-level marketing plans, and there are signs that it's a multi-level marketing or a promotional thing, but that doesn't mean it's not good. Amway has good products. I'm not selling Amway. I've never sold Amway. I've had people try to sell me and get me in on that. They always try to get on the people that are comfortable talking to other people, obviously, because it thickens their stream. As if it's urine, you're just pissing a thick stream. That's a good thing. And lastly, what I wanted to talk about today, we were talking about placebos and drugs and all that. What is the big fucking deal when they're advertising? Pharmaceuticals are a big business when they can advertise on the during a Super Bowl, and the commercials are movie quality, special effects. Incredible. They spend millions of dollars on pharmaceutical commercials and the million dollars on research, millions of dollars on research, and legal disclaimers right at the end. Pay attention to the legal disclaimers. I've had discussion before with people about legal disclaimers. What happens with them? Well, in a legal disclaimer, they'll say all the side effects that could possibly happen. And when they're doing the studies for getting FDA approval, they got to put in every adverse effect that showed up during the trial. It doesn't mean it's attributed to the pharmaceutical, or it could be attributed to it. It could be or could not. And it could only have, if they did a test on 1,000 subjects and one person had diarrhea, they got to mention diarrhea. If one person's foot fell off, they have to mention that. The which I kind of makes sense, but you got to keep in mind, what is the prevalence of it? How likely is it to happen? Did it happen to a goodly number of the 1,000 subjects, or did it happen to one person? You can say, in 1% of the times we saw this, and 2% of the times this. 75% of the people had their rectums explode. Well, that would be an important thing to put, you know, how big effect. But that isn't the thing I'm talking about today. The last one is do not take, let's say, cantitoric Travix. I'm trying to make it up. I don't think there is a drug called cantitoric Travix, but they'll go through all the disclaimers, could cause diarrhea, could cause unexplained symptoms of pregnancy. And then finally says, don't take cantitoric Travix if you're allergic to cantitoric Travix. Now, the drug was just invented. Is cantitoric Travix present in Captain Crunch cereal or in Big Macs or in Coca-Cola? No, we just formulated it. How do you know if you're allergic to cantitoric Travix? It's like, you know, all of a sudden you say, well, I'm going to take this thing's going to help me. This good thing's going to help me from falling over sideways. Say, fall of cantitoric Travix keeps me from falling, cantering sideways and falling over. Right? But I'm allergic to cantitoric Travix. How do you know you're allergic to it? I don't know. I've never taken it. I never heard of it. And it just created in the last 5 years, 10 years, whatever, 15 years. So it's like saying, well, if you take it and you something bad happens and you have an allergic reaction and you go to see the doctor that prescribed it, or you try to sue the company, they'll say, we told you, don't take cantitoric Travix if you are allergic to it. And here you go, you would die. And we told you not, we told them not to take it if it's not, if they're allergic to it, but they took it. Well, how would they know if they're allergic to it unless they try it? Well, and then one person said, well, you could do an allergy test. You could do an allergy test. So I guess they'd have to do allergy test on every time you take something, you've got to do an allergy test in order to protect yourself against the disclaimer that when your doctor prescribes something, well, hey, is this a new drug? And said, can I get an allergy test for it? They don't do that. They don't do that thing. So if you go and take cantitoric Travix, and that may come up because there's some fucked up names for medicines, and your anus explodes, don't come crying to me. But I guess it's caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. Have a great day. This is Jim the Keys Bartender. I'll be back again. Probably, I think probably on Thursday. Talk to you later. Bye.